Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson. Later in the show, we get a sneak peek into the month of March in Ames and Storey County with our regular guest, Allison Walters, from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. March, of course, starts tomorrow, not today. Today is that special day that rolls around every 4 years, Leap Day. For those of you who are wondering, it was the ancient Egyptians who first noticed that our planet's solar year took a little more than 365 days to complete, more like 365 and a quarter days. And it was the Romans who chose February 29th as Leap Day. It took the Gregorian monks of the 16th century to codify the once every 4 years routine. People attach various kinds of significance to Leap Day. Perhaps the most famous is the legend that St. Patrick allowed this day for women to make marriage proposals to men instead of the other way around. Centuries later, Queen Margaret of Scotland was said to have added the rule that if the man refused, he paid a fine, or at least owed the lady in question a very nice gift. From these formulations, we get the tradition of the Sadie Hawkins dance, often held at high schools during the month of February. But for today on Local Talk, we are tossing all that romantic folly aside and treating this year's February 29th as Iowa's extra day to work toward meaningful criminal justice reform. In this regard, the year started with much fanfare at the Condition of the State address, where Governor Terry Branstad described how the advocacy and friendship of NAACP's Iowa director, Betty Andrews, had made criminal justice a key issue for him. He implied in that January speech that criminal justice reform is a bipartisan issue.
We all need to work together to address justice in Iowa. Ensuring fundamental fairness is a worthy goal, but a fair and more equitable criminal justice system also aligns with the long-term interests of taxpayers who fund our criminal justice system. For example, in many cases, tax dollars may be better spent on rehabilitation rather than incarceration.
Since then, progress in the Iowa State House has lagged, with the Des Moines Register reporting early this month that a racial profiling bill was never even assigned to committee, while other measures supported by the NAACP were lingering without much progress. A central talking point for the NAACP is Iowa's unfortunate distinction as number one in racial disparity. We are the state with the highest rate of African-American imprisonment per population in relation to whites. And that rate, by the way, is 13 to 1. Racial disparity is not the central focus of Representative Helen Miller of Fort Dodge, who I spoke with yesterday. Representative Miller has been performing her own crusade on behalf of criminal justice reform in Iowa, parallel to but different from that of Betty Andrews and the NAACP. In Representative Miller's Criminal Justice Summit at University of Northern Iowa this past October, the emphasis was on how Iowa's issues aligned with the national crises of burgeoning prison populations, the high cost of imprisoning such numbers, and high recidivism rates. She also described to me how it was her white constituents, she herself is African American, who had come to her with complaints about how Iowa's criminal code was crippling offenders for life, and indeed crippling the larger community by taking away ex-offenders' voting rights, their employment opportunities, their relationships with their children's schools, and so on. Helen Miller is following up on this past October's summit, which attracted some 300 people, with smaller events or conversations, as she is calling them, one held last weekend in Fort Dodge and another scheduled for this coming weekend in Des Moines, and several others being planned around the state, possibly even in Ames. Here is Representative Helen Miller describing last weekend's conversation in her hometown of Fort Dodge.
We had panelists from our criminal justice system here. We had our own county sheriff. We had our own chief of police on panels. We had councilmen who, I think we had an administrative law judge who came in and talked about what she thought the answers were and what the community could or should do. A woman who worked for a mediation group. We had a professor from a community college. We had Mike Devine from Divine Intervention, a local talk radio show, giving his views. And so we had a broad view of what it is that the community could look at and what they thought some of the issues were. And that was very well received. We had more than 100 people in attendance.
And you're going to have another conversation this weekend down in Des Moines.
Correct, at DMAC Southridge Mall campus, starting at 9 on Saturday morning, going to about 1 p.m. We will be focused a lot on the legislative bills that have come forward. You can get questions answered as to where they are, what people want to see or hear, what do they think can help. We'll also hear from Betty Andrews from the NAACP, has been invited to give us a picture of what's happening across the country in different states. We also will have Kevin McCarthy, who is the first assistant attorney general here in Iowa, who has some thoughts and ideas that he's been working on and that he would like to move forward. And so all of that will be shared. And we're also hoping to get a focus on the economic impact of incarceration, what it does to the families and the individuals who are incarcerated.
And also to the communities that have to pay for
absolutely
incarceration.
Absolutely.
You have a few bills yourself. You filed a few bills yourself on criminal justice issues. Would you like to share those with the audience?
Well, one of my bills would restore voting rights. Some people may know that Governor Vilsack restored those to offenders who had completed their responsibilities as offenders. And he had done that by executive order. Terry Branstad, when he came into office, one of his first things to do was to wipe that out. So there was no longer a restoration of voting rights. I have legislation. I think it can be done legislatively to restore voting rights to offenders. But I have other pieces of legislation that would allow individuals, regardless of the amount of money that they owe, they would be allowed a period of time to pay those fines. Also, an offender diversion program for those who offend but who have a mental disability. I also wanted to be sure that if an individual gets training and is licensed to do something, the entities that would hire him or license him would be able to look at that individual, and if they found that he was worthy, regardless of his criminal record, they would allow him to go ahead and be licensed in whatever area he's trained in. Because, you know, we license in a lot of areas, and we have to license attorneys, we have to license morticians, we have to license electricians. And
beauty parlor.
Yes, exactly. So we really should want for individuals to be able to have the ability to earn a living. And so if we're doing things that get in the way of that, unintended consequences, I think that we should address that.
And so the payment plan sounds very important, because from what I understand, someone who has a very minor offense is jailed for a few days and then gets a fine, maybe has to pay his jail costs and can't do so right away. Well, then it kind of redoubles and he kind of gets deeper into the system.
Exactly. And it leads to an economic downspiraling, for I've heard from many individuals. And so that's pretty serious. And that's something that we can address, because you're taking someone who perhaps, if they had a bit more time to pay a fine or whatever, would pay it. And we're turning them essentially into a criminal because they cannot pay the fine.
I've heard it called the debtor's prison of our day.
Exactly.
And then the mental issues, that is huge, because we really are using our prisons these days as de facto mental institutions.
I understand that maybe even 25% of our jail population has a mental issue.
And then the ability to license oneself. Is Ban the Box, did you file that bill, or was that somebody else?
No, that was somebody else. I did not file that bill, and I did not file the racial profiling bill. So individuals engaged in those will be present at our conference, and we'll be talking about those. So.
Oh, good, because I was curious why the racial profiling bill was not even assigned to committee.
Yeah, well, and that's why I think that, you know, the House is, you know, in Republican control. And like I said, I'm a Democrat, but you know, it's a bipartisan issue. I've got a lot of support from this, from folks on both the left and on the right. And so it really shouldn't be partisan. And I'm hoping, the reason I decided to go ahead and just file all my bills was to get people to watch and know that somebody's thinking about it, to get the conversation going. And perhaps by the time that we come back to session next year, if we don't, because, you know, this is the second year of the 2-year session, and so we start afresh next year. And maybe by the time that we start next year, the word will have gotten out and folks will, because so many people are impacted by this. So many people are impacted by this. So maybe they will have weighed in and there can be a real push to get this done. I am talking with Professor Wing out at the University of Iowa about the possibility of perhaps doing one out there, maybe even in April. And there are folks from around the state who've been asking about the possibility of doing this in their hometown or their district. And I think it's a good idea because the local legislators then become aware that people are interested in this issue and may want to do something about it. And then people are empowered to want to communicate with their legislators. It's not a get out of jail free card or anything like that that I'm advocating. It's basically if you've done your time, you've paid your fine, and you need to move out and get on with the rest of your life. And how is it that this society, with its rules and regulations, are harming you and harming all of us because you don't get to move on? You have to stay stuck in, I am an ex-offender for the rest of your life.
Hmm. And I have to ask you, it's interesting, I looked up your profile in the Iowa House, and you are not on the Criminal Justice Committee. You're on several other committees. You're the ranking member of the Agriculture Committee. How did you get interested in this topic?
Well, it may not be apparent from the surface, but I am an attorney. I am a graduate of the Georgetown University Law School, member of the D.C. Bar, where I practiced criminal law for a number of years. And so I was practicing law, I do recall, back in the early 80s when President Ronald Reagan ended the training program, which was called CETA. I can't remember exactly what it stood for. And I remember how drastically the number of drug arrests increased after that when people had no opportunity to training for jobs. So people started, you know, the drug thing just kind of picked up. And
was this out on the East Coast?
This is out on the East Coast, which is where I come from. I moved here from the Washington, D.C. area 16 years ago. So I'm not a native to Iowa. I still keep in touch with the friends that I have in law enforcement and those issues. So I get that. And I've seen with the large population of African Americans in Washington, D.C., I have seen how the Get Tough on Crime, the mandatory minimum, has decimated the community. I've seen it all firsthand. I've also seen, I was a kid in Newark, New Jersey when we had the riots because an African American was arrested because I think his taillight was out or something. City of Newark was up in flames. I was a kid, a little older kid though, in D.C. when the riots took place there when Martin Luther King was killed. So I remember that. And as it turned out last year, I happened to be in Baltimore when the riots occurred, when Freddie Gray was arrested. And I've written an article for the Des Moines Register about those experiences, and because people always want to know, what is it? Why are you doing this? You don't know anything about it. I beg your pardon. I know a lot about it.
I'm sorry. And I didn't mean to imply that.
No, not you. But people say, well, why are you doing this? I don't understand. And I go, you know, you don't know. No, but that is a logical, you know, a question. But I have practiced criminal law in my lifetime. I never did it. I moved here in 1999. I had been here just over 3 years, and Justice Katie had just sworn me in as a member of the Iowa Bar, and I got elected to the Iowa House. And I've never practiced law, but, you know, once a lawyer, always a lawyer. And I was there when all this stuff started, so I kind of sort of get it. I really do.
But you were telling me that the many people who bring these issues to your attention in your district in Fort Dodge are not people of color. They are white folks who have gotten trapped by this same system.
And not just people in Fort Dodge. I have now, and I guess since I started doing this, I have gotten letters and packages from people who hope I can help from Florida. I just opened up one today from Minneapolis, from Wisconsin, We had people who came to this conference in Iowa from all over the United States. You know, it wasn't just, you know, here. People were coming because they see that somebody somewhere is seeking to do something. And then people come up to me and they just hand me a folder. And I tell them, you know, I'm an attorney, but I don't have the wherewithal and I don't have a staff to really help you. But most of those people who send me this stuff, believe it or not, are white folks. So that's why I say, to a very large degree, it is a fairness issue. And if we address this in that way, I think we help everybody. You know what? I'm African-American. If you don't like African-Americans, I can't change that. There's nothing I can do about that. I can try, maybe, but I can't really change that. But what I can do is do my absolute best to set up a system that's fair to all of us. And if you just treat me fairly, that's all I want. You don't have to like me, but treat me right. That's all I want. And that's what I think everybody wants. I don't care whether you're black or white or whatever. We all want it to be treated fairly.
And it sounds like with just a touch of mercy, so that
exactly.
Our mistakes
very well
do not
said.
Follow us forever.
Exactly. We seem to love to punish, and then we don't really forgive. Or maybe we say we forgive, but we surely don't forget, because every day those individuals are reminded.
Well, it's really remarkable what you're doing around the state. I know that now that I and my listeners are aware of this, we're going to be hearing your name all over the place and hearing about your organization. How can they get in touch with some of these conversations that are going on around the state?
Just that Facebook page, and, you know, my cell number is all over the place, so anybody can call my cell number. And then we do have iajusticesummit@gmail.com is the email address that I use. People just write and want to talk, or, you know, people have called. And like I said, not just from Iowa, but I'm a legislator. And I guess also one of the reasons I do this, and I should, to be full disclosure, I have 5 African-American grandsons. And I have a 6th one on the way. 5 of them live in Maryland. My daughter, who's having the one that's due this summer, lives in Des Moines. And I really want to make sure that those boys are safe as anyone else, as safe as they can be. That's really, really important. I think the other reason is that my husband, who died about 5 years ago, when he was dying, he told me, he said, you know, the Lord is taking me for some reason. And I get a little emotional when I say this, but, and he said, he's leading you here. He said, there is something that you are supposed to do. He said, figure out what it is and do it. And he has left me the means. I don't have to worry about another job. I don't have to worry about, you know, a car breaking down or a house to live in or any of that. And so I can truly just serve, and I think that's what he would want me to do as well. And so that's exactly what I intend to do.
Best of luck, Helen Miller, Representative Helen Miller from Fort Dodge, Iowa, who's holding a conversation on criminal justice this Saturday, March 5th, at the DMACC Southridge Mall campus in Des Moines. What time does that start?
We will be opening the doors at 8:30. We start at 9 a.m. I'm expecting maybe about 75 to 100, but I do have 2 anonymous donors who will provide lunch for up to 75 people. So I hope we get at least 75.
Okay.
So we can eat the lunch.
Well, it sounds like it'll be a very informative time, and you'll find out where the various bills are as they've proceeded or not proceeded this session, and then strategize maybe for the next year. And once again, that was Representative Helen Miller of Fort Dodge. She held a statewide summit in October on criminal justice and since then has been holding conversations among criminal justice professionals and others in locales around the state on aspects of the criminal justice system that are crippling our communities with unintended consequences, she says. So you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson, and we are now joined by Boone Representative Republican Chip Baltimore, who is the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, the destination for some of those bills that Representative Miller filed. We hope to understand from him what his committee's priorities have been this season. Can you hear me, Representative Baltimore?
I can, Greta. Thank you so much for having me on this morning.
And welcome to Local Talk. I heard from Representative Miller that you were actually part of a panel at the Summit on Iowa Criminal Justice that she organized at the University of Northern Iowa this past October.
I was, yes.
Can you share what you talked about there?
Well, I think the general discussion was more almost listening to the people that were attending there than talking. Many of the attendees had relatives or friends or acquaintances that had been involved in the criminal justice system, and a lot of what we were trying to do was listen to their stories and hear from them how they felt the system could be improved and what kind of things they felt needed to be done to try to improve their situation.
And she spoke of unintended consequences of some of the punitive and, you know, protective measures that, you know, you don't allow ex-offenders to do X, Y, and Z. Well, pretty soon they're just they're blocked out of a lot of different, possibilities in life and not much is left to them.
Well, there are unintended consequences to everything that we do, I think, at the legislature, and we try to keep those to a minimum. And I think a lot of it depends on what you're actually looking at in terms of the consequences. You know, when people commit crimes, there are consequences. And that's what the legislature is all about when it comes to establishing, you know, criminal policy. And the last time I checked, there's not a single law on the books in terms of the criminal justice system that has race as a part of it. You know, the laws are written, and Representative Miller's been part of the legislature for far longer than I have. You know, she's been there since 2003 or 2004. I've been there the last 6 years, and you know, she doesn't write laws that are racially biased, and I don't think that we do either. Since the time I've been there, we look at what the actions are that are being committed, and try to determine the appropriate punishment for that. And sometimes consequences extend beyond just the actual sentence that we set. I think we become relatively reflective of what society wants in terms of the consequences that are there. But we try to have the conversations because we don't want unintended consequences that are negative to the society as a whole.
Okay. Well, she kind of downplayed in my conversation with her the issue of race. But since we are talking about it, I should also preface this by, you know, through my research, I've discovered that there's not just the House Judiciary Committee. There's also the Committee for Public Safety, and that would involve things like policing. So, not everything comes through your not all of these issues come through your committee. But, you know, for instance, the ACLU came out with a report just several years ago saying that, for instance, nationwide, blacks and whites use marijuana at roughly the same rates. Blacks are arrested for marijuana possession 3 to 4 times the rate of whites. And in Iowa, blacks are 8 times more likely than whites to get arrested. So there is some kind of disparity. It might not be happening in the laws, but perhaps it's happening in the policing.
Well, I guess I would turn around and ask the question, are there Caucasians that are caught with marijuana that are not subsequently charged for possession of marijuana? I'm not aware of that happening anywhere in the state. So, you know, we can come up with these statistics and show certain things, but, you know, unless somebody can point to an instance where either minorities are being unfairly charged with marijuana, nobody's claiming that the people that are arrested for possession of marijuana didn't actually have it. So, you know, so if there are minorities that are being charged with possession of marijuana that don't actually possess the marijuana, then that's a problem that absolutely needs to be fixed. I'm not aware that that's happening, but that would be indicative of a problem with the system. By the same token, if there are Caucasians that are possessing marijuana that are being caught and not being charged, that too is a problem. I'm not aware of that happening either. So I think what we probably need to do is, instead of just looking at that broad global statistic, figure out what's going on. Is it a matter why are minorities being caught more often than whites? If you take as a given conclusion that blacks and whites do marijuana at the same basic rate.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the methods of the ACLU study that determined that there was that parity in use, but I think that the advocates for against racial disparity are saying that it's a matter of profiling blacks, stopping them, and searching their cars more often, and so on.
If that's the case, then maybe we got to look at the underlying behavior too. I don't think that profiling is correct or proper in the vast majority of circumstances. However, possession of marijuana is illegal across the board. So whether someone is being profiled or not, they're still committing a criminal act. And I think that more of the focus of this effort really ought to be, how do we prevent crimes from happening in the first place, than how do we punish them afterwards? Or, you know, because at that point in time, we have a criminal act, and we have a criminal, regardless of their race. So if we want to avoid the unintended consequences of a crime and the criminal sentencing that results from that, probably the best way to avoid those unintended consequences is to not be committing the crimes in the first place. So I think more of our attention needs to be, how do we strengthen our communities to make sure that those crimes are not being committed?
Okay, well, that is certainly a conversation that Representative Miller was wanting to have. And in terms of the recidivism rate of offenders and their abilities to get back on their feet after they've done their time, paid their dues, she feels that there could be more of an effort toward rehabilitation as opposed to punishment, and that was actually something that Governor Branstad mentioned in his condition of the state address, that maybe state dollars would be better served rehabilitating prisoners, preparing them for reentry into society, than extending their sentences longer. So how are those efforts going in the legislation? Is there legislation out there that's asking our system to be more of a corrections system and less of a penal system?
I don't know that there's a specific bill that directs things that direction. We spend a substantial amount of money, I think primarily in the budget system, on community-based corrections, trying to keep especially the nonviolent, low-risk offenders out of jail and out of prison and in their communities, coupled with services. So if there's a drug problem, then there's drug treatment that is there. If there are family issues, then we try to address the family situation there as well. If there are education issues or job training issues, then we work that through the community-based correction system as well. And there are many, many, many more people in the community-based correction system than there are in actual prisons. The prison system in Iowa is primarily for either multiple, you know, repeat offenders or the severely violent. And that's really where they belong. So we look periodically, and we're looking again this session, as we always do, at the specific sentences that we have for specific crimes to determine whether or not, you know, a prison term is appropriate. We've looked at the mandatory minimum sentences that we have out there. There may be some effort to tweak some of those to try to address some situations that we feel that maybe the mandatory minimum may be too high. But by and large, those mandatory minimums are either for these severely violent people and the violent crimes that they commit, or a lower mandatory minimum for those people in the drug system that are either dealing or possessing very large quantities of drugs.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed when I was doing a little research, the numbers, and what you say is borne out by the numbers, that we have some 8,000 some people in the correction system in prisons, and 30,000 compared to that 8,000 who are in community-based corrections. You mentioned mandatory minimums, and this is another interesting thought that Senator Grassley, who has been receiving a lot of attention these days as his role as a chair of a judiciary committee, last year put forward a bill, Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act of 2015, on the national level, which would reduce mandatory minimum sentences for a variety of drug offenses. So this does seem to be something that is getting a little bit of bipartisan agreement that, you know, we can reduce the taxpayer burden of prison and also, you know, allow people to get on with their lives.
Yeah, there was honestly more room for reform on mandatory minimum drug sentences at the federal level than there is at the state level. You know, at the state level, we only have, I think it's 10 or 12 drug crimes that have mandatory minimums, and that mandatory minimum is 30%. All right, so if you're sentenced to 10 years, then you're required to serve 3 years of that sentence under these 10 crimes. And these 10 crimes, again, are the dealer related. So if you actually are out there dealing drugs, or you possess large quantities, far more than you could consume yourself, it's kind of presumed that you're dealing or delivering when you have that much. And so it's not, you know, I'm carrying a little baggie of marijuana on the street and I get picked up and charged, and therefore I go away to prison for 30% of whatever the sentence is. That's not how it works in Iowa. We have a very limited number of drug-related offenses that are subject to a very low mandatory minimum. That's only 30%.
Right.
So at the federal level, there were far more crimes, criminal provisions that required a mandatory minimum. The mandatory minimum was higher. So there was more room at the federal level to do that. The other mandatory minimums that we have in the state are 70% of the sentence is the mandatory minimum, and that's reserved for things like murder in the second degree, attempted murder, kidnapping, serious sexual assault, robbery, which is, you know, you're stealing something and you also harm somebody, injure somebody, assault somebody in the course of that robbery, and you do so with the intent to do that. And vehicular homicide. So, and I think there's one or two others in there, but those are the kind of violent crimes that result in either death or intended death or harm to somebody else that have the 70% mandatory minimum. It used to be 85%. That was lowered to 70% a number of years ago. But, you know, those are the people that, in my opinion, and I think in the opinions of the people that I talk to out on the street, those are the ones you want in prison. If you're trying to kill somebody and you fail, so you don't go away for life, 70% of the sentence is probably not inappropriate, I think, in many people's opinion.
So the mandatory minimums that might be tweaked this session have more to do with things like theft, minor thefts, you know, without harm done to people.
Well, minor theft without harm is probably not one of those that's currently eligible. We're looking right now at possibly giving the court some discretion to determine an appropriate mandatory minimum for things like robbery in the second degree, where you don't necessarily go with the intention to harm somebody, but you actually do when you're trying to steal something.
Right.
You know, again, there's an intention element to that that reflects a certain level of depravity or lack of depravity when you're actually going to commit the crime. So we're looking at some of those things as far as whether or not we can have the judicial system more appropriately have cause the sentence to fit the crime that's actually committed.
Okay. Just briefly before we go, I'm interested also in this bill that, or maybe not the bill specifically, but the idea that Representative Miller brought forward that, you know, that our system can become a debtor's prison when an offender is fined and is expected to pay, you know, a fine of, say, $300, you know, right up front. If they don't pay the fine, then, you know, they are charged further with, you know, they get deeper into the system. Is that something that you think could be addressed through payment plans? I know that there are payment plans for larger fines, but it can, you know, the level of poverty out there is pretty severe. I know through my friends, a lot of them couldn't come up with a $300 fine. Is that something that could be implemented to make the system fairer?
Possibly. You know, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, many of the crimes that have fines involved already have the ability to have payment plans. I mean, that's part of the probation system. When you're placed on probation, a criminal defendant will meet with their probation officer, and they'll go, and the probation officer puts together a plan with them, and it means, you know, what are you going to do to get a job if you don't have one, or how are you going to stay employed? You know, what are you going to do for housing? How are you going to deal with transportation? And how are you going to pay your fine back? And they set up a payment plan, and if they don't, you know, meet the payment plan, and it's not like, oh, you know what, my car broke down, I had to spend money on fixing my car, therefore I couldn't make my fine payment this month, the probation officer revokes their probation. That's not how the system works. The system works in such a way that if you are not looking for a job, if you don't have one, and you're not doing the other things, and you're also not paying your fine, you're basically not complying with the terms of your probation, that's when they revoke the probation. So there's plenty of room in there for setting up payment plans already. What I think Representative Miller is talking about is some of those low-level fines of a few hundred dollars. And I don't have a problem setting up a payment plan on that. I haven't seen a specific bill on it that's come to my attention. Maybe there's one out there that I'm not aware of, but I don't believe it's in the Judiciary Committee that I'm in charge of. You know, but you know, what we have to also understand is that if you're going to take a $300 fine, there's typically not a whole lot of other probation requirements on top of that, but then we have to have probation officers meeting with people to figure out how to pay a $300 fine. So it expands the cost of the system when we sit here and try to figure out how are we going to pay back these lower level amounts. Mm-hmm. We've seen things like speeding tickets be a problem.
Yep.
You know, speeding ticket now is, you know, your, I think your basic one's about $135 by the time you add in the court costs and the surcharges. And if you don't pay your speeding tickets, then you can possibly lose your driver's license, and that has consequences down the road too. I am fully cognizant of the fact that sometimes those low-level fine amounts can be problematic. too often those low-level fine amounts get pushed to the back of the bus in terms of priority of getting them paid back as well. So, again, there's maybe some room there to take a look at that, but I doubt we're going to get to the point where we're going to be taking $5 a month because the cost of trying to oversee all of that is just not going to be worth it in the end.
Okay, well, I've got to move on, but we really appreciate your joining us this morning, Representative Baltimore, Chair of the House Judiciary Committee. Thank you so much for getting back to me and participating in this conversation.
Always happy to do it, Greta. Thank you.
All right. Again, that was Representative Chip Baltimore, Republican from Boone, Iowa, and discussing criminal justice reform. This is Local Talk. When we come back, Allison Walter joins us with a laundry list of things to look forward to this coming month of March.
Okay. Here I come, the merchant of dirt, and here to convert the worthless birds that chirp. Come get your just desserts and discuss your worth, or just cuss your words and discuss the hurt. Bless the verbs of many war minds just to serve, and we don't have any more time. I find myself in truth and honor, gonna bulletproof armor wherever you wander. Ponder soliloquies of stupidity, the epitome of misery that never needs company. Somebody stop me from saying straight and invest in my faith in a professional ring.
Come on, fuel the fire, crucify, rage your mind, lose and I do and die suicide. Lucky were you to survive, you've been lied to all your life, fool. We all want the nice schools, we all want the right moves, the nice shoes. We all want the same tricks, same clothes, same whips. We all speak the same flow, same old, same. Cause things never change. New smaller reins for your blue collar chains.
Don't be afraid, it's all make believe anyway. We can leave any day. Despite what you hear people say, because the fear keeps us chained. Don't be afraid, it's all make-believe anyway. We can leave any day, keep the faith. Despite what you hear people say, because the fear keeps us chained.
See, the fear keeps us chained. But don't be afraid.
Okay. This is Leap Day on Local Talk, KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson. And after some pretty serious conversations, I'm looking forward to hearing some happy thoughts from Allison Walter, who brings us always things to look forward to. A few notes about March. March is known for the madness that ensues. And tomorrow, the girls from Nevada in the 3A and the girls in Ballard-Huxley in 4A, we'll be starting their state championship run, so we wish them luck. Also, March is that month known for coming in like a lion, and I hear that there will be weather tonight, so just heads up on that. So, Allison, welcome welcome back to the studio.
Well, thank you.
And welcome back from your vacation.
Thank you, yes.
What have we got going on in March?
Well, you know, mentioning spring, we've got a home and garden show here in Ames for the first time in a long time. The Ames Home Builders Association is doing a home and garden show next weekend, and it's from 10 to 6 on Saturday and 10 to 5 on Sunday. It's at the Hanson Student Agricultural Learning Center.
Okay.
And they have over 60 vendors from the home and building, home improvement, lifestyle living companies, and they'll be doing lots of demonstrations and workshops as well. So you can join them at the Hanson Agriculture Student Learning Center.
That's on March 5th and 6th?
5th and 6th,
right.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. On Mortensen.
No, on Mortensen Road, yes,
yep.
Exactly.
It's a very convenient location.
Yes. Also, Brunier is doing their Brunier in Bloom. That's towards the end of March, but they'll do an opening reception on Friday the 25th, and then the exhibition will be on display Saturday and Sunday, the 26th and 7th, from 11 to 4, and that's at the Brunier Art Museum. And what they do is they pair a floral designer with a piece of art from Brunier, and the designer interprets that art through floral decorations. It's a wonderful event, and it really is a great kickoff for the spring season.
Never been to one of those, so
I have to check it out this year.
The 25th of March.
Yes, through the 27th. Some great movies this month. Of course, the Cyclone Cinema is doing free movies every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evening. And they do showings at 7 and 10 in the Carver Auditorium, 101 Carver on Central Campus. And it's free and open to anyone that would like to join. And they are showing Creed this upcoming weekend. They have Joy the next weekend and The Big Short.
And I was thinking of going to The Big Short this weekend, and I would have had to go all the way down to Des Moines, the Fleur Cinema, and I would have had to pay admission. So that sounds pretty nice.
Exactly. And also, the Ames Public Library is doing movies, and they always try to get a great film that didn't come to Ames, and they do those on Wednesday evenings at 6:30. So this week the movie is The Sea Inside, and then you can check our website for all the other films that will be throughout the month on visitames.com and take another opportunity to catch a free movie in Ames. Art Cicati is doing his glass workshops two Saturdays in March. This Saturday, the 5th, he'll be making round paperweights. And on Saturday, the 19th, they'll be making glass flowers. And this is a great opportunity to work with Art, who is the glass blower, and actually blow your own piece of glass. You register and sign up for a time slot. It's about 15 to 20 minutes. And you work one-on-one with Art, and he will help you make a wonderful piece of glasswork.
And how do you sign up for that?
You can register on his website, which is SicartiArtGlass.com. But you can also check our website for details. We have a link there to sign up. You know, Easter will be coming up at the end of the month, and so there will definitely be Easter services and Easter activities, Easter cooking demonstrations. Cook's Emporium does their Saturday morning cooking demonstrations every Saturday at 10 a.m., and they've got some great things planned for this month, spring desserts, easy tips for Easter entertaining, a great scrambled egg recipe. So you can check out Cook's Emporium for some cooking ideas. And also, Ryman Gardens will be doing an Easter egg hunt.
I was just going to say, you mentioned the eggs.
Saturday the 26th.
Okay, and day before Easter.
Day before Easter. Kids have an opportunity to search for colorful eggs, and then they can trade those eggs in for a goodie bag that will also include crafts and activity stations as well throughout the gardens. We've got lots of events at Ryman Gardens throughout the month, spring pruning, plant propagation for both kids and adults, floral design series, and they're doing their Ryman After Hours, starting that up for the season on Friday the 18th from 4:30 to 7. They'll be doing a St. Patrick's Day event.
Oh, of course.
Sit back and enjoy some Celtic music, and there'll be refreshments as well. So that's at Ryman Gardens on Friday, March 18th.
And I believe we have a St. Patrick's event here at the station.
Yes.
The day before.
Right. The Thursday Cafe, is that what you call it? Thursday Cafe, yes. Liana, I believe, is the name of the band that will be performing. Lots of events at the library throughout the month, including another movie, Ant-Man, that they'll be showing on Saturday the 19th from 2 to 4. And they'll also be providing popcorn on that one. And Puppets and Stories in the Stacks is a series that they're working with Reed Miller, the puppeteer and storyteller, and he gives you an opportunity to make puppets or bring your own and have some fun putting on puppet shows.
So is that like an ongoing workshop?
Ongoing on Sunday afternoons from 2 to 4.
Oh,
so it's a great series, and he received some funding for that through the Ames Community Grant Program.
Good for you.
Which we've talked about before.
So
Go ahead.
Well, I'm wondering, because so many people have spring break in the middle of March,
yes.
and there's this big open time to do fun things. Are there events or activities scheduled for that time that people can plug into if they're not going to Florida or wherever else people go when they have money?
Right. We actually did an article, and it's on our website, about things to do during spring break. So you can check that out. I think there's a link right on our homepage, definitely on our event calendar, to see some great ideas. But you can always check out our event calendar for the time frame and lots of different things going on. Right. Yeah. I just saw also that the library is going to be doing a garden book sale, and all their gardening books will be on special Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 18th, 19th, and 20th. So as you're thinking about spring and getting your garden ready, a great time to check out some books and maybe get some real bargains.
Yeah, well, actually, I wanted to remind folks that today is the last day of the library's book sale, winter book sale,
yes.
And that is the day for huge bargains. You go in and you get free books.
Right.
So the library is in the business of getting us our reading material at a low cost, and this is the epitome of that. You can just go and take a box. Early this morning, it opens at 9.
Yes.
And it's a very crowded time, but if you use your elbows, you can get some good stuff.
That's right. And on their gardening book sale, Sunday will be the day when everything that's left is half price. So you have to get there early to get what you really want, and then you have to go back at the end and get everything else half price. So, a lot of great shows at Stevens Auditorium this month also. Bullets Over Broadway is on Thursday this week at 7:30, and the Polish Baltic Philharmonic Orchestra is tomorrow night at 7:30. So a great couple of shows this week.
Okay, well, I think we are running out of time. Is there one last thing that you think we should know about before we sign off?
Well, there's lots to do, and just to remind you to check out our website, visitames.com, to see all of the details on all these things and all the ones that we didn't get to mention.
Okay, Allison, you mentioned that your webpage, yes, or maybe the phone app was getting a makeover.
Yes, our new mobile site, Sites of Ames, C-Y-T-E-S, is now online, and it's a great resource if you're in town and looking for something to do. Sites of Ames or visitames.com.
And that's for phone apps.
Right. Sites of Ames is our mobile site. Yep.
That's very handy. And okay, well, thank you so much for coming in,
Allison,
on your last vacation day.
Right.
We appreciate it.
No problem.
This has been Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. We started out the hour with a discussion on criminal justice reform in Iowa with two representatives from Central Iowa. Representative Helen Miller, a Democrat from Fort Dodge, who has been holding conversations around the state about the unintended consequences our criminal justice system might have, and by Representative Chip Baltimore from Boone, Iowa, chair of the House Judiciary Committee. And then we were joined by Allison Walter from Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau about happenings in Central Iowa this coming month of March. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all our show postings in your newsfeed. Thanks to webmaster Ron Carson for making that possible. Local Talk was engineered by Nadia Abdelazim. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Don't Be Afraid by Sweatshop Union. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878, or contact us through our website at khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.